Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Jim Sturgis and Mary Connaughton are in the studio with us now. Jim is Executive Director of the Pioneer Institute and a frequent guest on our show. It's good to see you, Jim.
Good to see you, too.
And Mary is Pioneer's Director of Government Transparency and Finance and Administration. Welcome to you.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
And both of you are here because, by just about every measure, or any measure that I can find, inequality in Massachusetts is growing. I mean, we're seeing that millennials can't afford to buy houses in Greater Boston. And, of course, in the past several years, income for the state's wealthiest 1% grew by, I'm seeing, 47, almost 50%. And for just about everyone else, it shrank. So you've edited a new book called Agenda for Leadership, Increasing Economic Mobility and Civic Engagement in Massachusetts. And I guess my first question to both of you is, what do you think the core problem is here? What's the issue that Agenda for Leadership is really trying to solve?
So let me take a quick crack at that. So, you know, it's really interesting to take a look at the issue of economic mobility around the country. All kinds of studies out there, and they're different in their methodology. And what they end up saying to some degree is that the bottom 20% have a real hard time moving out of the bottom 40%. They're lucky if they get out of the bottom 20%, but they don't really almost ever get out of the bottom 40%. Mm-hmm. Now, that's different from most European countries. It's something that I think should alarm us for as a country that believes itself as, you know, a place where there's lots of opportunity. There's an asterisk on all that because most of the studies do not include immigrants.
Right.
So, you know, those are people who are, you know, genuinely right now want to move up the ladder. That's why they came here. But you know what's unique about Massachusetts is this. We somehow geographically have interpreted this problem in a new way. And that is, Greater Boston's doing extremely well. Take a look at the Boston Globe today. Hot labor market.
Right.
And people are finding they can put pressure on wages. But if you take a look at Lawrence and New Bedford and Fall River and Holyoke, they've had above 10% unemployment for over a decade.
I mean, it's a story of two Massachusetts, is really. I mean, Mary, tell me a little bit more about this, because I know that you're familiar with a lot of the concerns, especially of people, you know, outside of Greater Boston. I remember back when you sat on the transportation board, you were frequently talking about the interests that you felt weren't being heard for people, you know, in the western part of the state.
There seems to be a great inequity too, particularly in transportation, where the Western Turnpike drivers are paying much more than other folks driving into the city. So we look at issues of equity, inequity. We look at that in terms of transportation and, you know, how can we get people back to work throughout the Commonwealth, not just in Boston, where, as Jim said, the labor market's really hot and there's opportunity here. Mm. The book also takes a look at the erosion of public trust. Both of those go hand in hand, social mobility and people believing in their government and trusting their government. So the book also focuses on ways to improve government transparency. As you might know, the Reporters Committee for Freedom of the Press ranked us among the lowest states for government transparency.
Yeah, we got an F.
We got an F. And the Center for Public Integrity gave us an F as well. So this book also promotes ideas to increase transparency.
Well, what I found very bracing about the book is that it's something that you point out right in the foreword, that we in Massachusetts, for lots of good reasons, like to think quite highly of ourselves. I mean, you actually opened it with a quotation from Ambrose Bierce, where he says that Massachusetts is where a pilgrim could personate God according to the dictates of his conscience. And then you write, we are no longer a place where a practical pilgrim can put his or her oar away, plow a field, and rise socially and economically in a way that upholds our original promise. So, Jim, tell me a little bit more about that. Let's get to some specific things that are going on in Massachusetts that, I mean, I think a lot of people would agree, is denying people the original promise that that we all collectively felt that this state, you know, represents.
Yeah, so let me speak directly to the issue of the tale of two cities in Massachusetts. And it's a conversation for another day, but the fact is all policy in Massachusetts is crafted in the image of Boston and Cambridge. And it does not fit the various markets that we have in other parts of the state, and frankly doesn't even reflect the populations that are there. So if you think about just one issue, the state gives out grants. It gives about $75 million in grants to cities around the state outside of Boston and Quincy and Cambridge. It gives them out in dollops, if you will, of $15,000, $25,000 to do these little, very, very small actions that often aren't coordinated. And you have mid-level folks in, let's say, Springfield who are dealing with mid-level folks and the state government trying to broker these different grants. It doesn't have a measurable impact on revitalizing the city. One of the big ideas in this book is the state needs a new relationship with cities outside of Greater Boston. They need to actually create block grants, just as the federal government does with states, and say, look, if you go through a visioning process and you decide where you want your infrastructure to change drastically, and you are willing to take on real reforms in terms of your financial management, we'll give you a block grant of $5 million, $15,000.
So it's not so much the money, but the manner in which the money is apportioned to from the state to cities and towns?
Yeah, it's definitely that. It's also that there's no vision or strategy behind the money. So there's maybe a $15,000 grant that goes to help out with a brownfield site. There's no follow-up.
Doesn't this get to like the age-old Massachusetts tradition of localism, though? I mean, aren't there many people out there in cities and towns that say maybe the block grant idea might not work for us because what we really know is, yes, we actually need something for that particular brownfield.
Right. But I think if you're dealing with cities that have, and we take a look at the data here, they have declining employment rates in many instances. They have troubles in terms of their fiscal management. They have difficulties in terms of their the rates of crime and all the rest, and it's not improving, and this is over decades. You've got to try something different.
Hmm. And Mary, tell me a little bit more about some of the other... I mean, there's a whole section about economic opportunity in the book. I was quite taken by the fact that you point out that while Massachusetts tends to rebound more quickly from recessions than many other states, where jobs are concerned, however, you write, the state has shown less ability... overall job growth in Massachusetts for 25 years has flatlined. So we can rebound, but when it comes to the big picture, we haven't actually improved substantially. Tell me more about that.
And that's also in other parts of the state. Again, Boston still has a very strong labor market. But we see that reflected where companies have moved out. We think we're the great entrepreneurial state, but no one's really replacing those jobs in that amount of to the extent that they're lost. Like the average new entrepreneur is creating 3.7 jobs. But when we're losing, obviously we've lost a lot of manufacturing jobs, and that's affected Western Massachusetts and Central Massachusetts incredibly. And on top of that, that means that the housing values have gone down because there's not enough people to buy the houses. So the people that are there are stuck where they are. They can't sell their houses. They're below water. And they're just not improving to the extent that this area of Boston is.
And one of your policy prescriptions for helping people in those communities?
We need to take another look at our permitting process, so to encourage more development. When there's development, there's carpenters that go to work, plumbers that go to work, electricians that go to work. But right now, our permitting process is broken. It takes too long to get get development permits. There was a recent study in San Diego, and this is that showed that 40% of housing costs are related to permitting issues. And that's the same in Massachusetts. And when those costs are so inflated, it makes it very difficult to get developers to build, particularly outside of Greater Boston.
Right. You know, so permitting is one of the things where I feel like the rubber really meets the road in Massachusetts, because it's sort of there's bipartisan agreement that it's a problem, mm-hmm. You know, whether you're talking about permitting for new housing developments or mixed-use communities, areas you write a lot about that in the book, and that it's just slower than molasses in winter in Massachusetts. So, I just wonder, what constantly perplexes me is that if there is so much agreement about this, why is it so hard to fix? I mean, what's your prescription to really get permitting moving in Massachusetts?
Right, and this is one where you're going to have to cut against localism to some degree. And that is, look, there are a lot of different, if you will, sort of arrows aiming at a specific target in the book. We're not saying here's one thing that'll fix everything. There are eight different prescriptions for the housing crisis, and some are really small. Let me just give you one. In many of our communities that are, let's say, suburbs of Boston, We have very large houses with elderly people living in them who'd like to stay in those houses, but they cannot put in an accessory apartment unit, right? That would allow them to have more income. That would allow them to stay in their homes. It would allow them to create another unit, whether it's Newton or it's wherever it is. That should be by right, because every community will block that because they don't want to have more kids in their schools. But to some degree, if we want to actually address this issue of affordable housing, not having a negative impact on the environment, if we want older folks to stay in their homes, if we want people who are young to actually stay here and have access to an affordable place and a place they might want to live, we're going to have to change that. So it's really a question about what we make by right and what we do in a, if you will, a measured way. Not saying, hey, developers can go wherever they want by right. That's not what we're after here. We're after a reasonable accommodations to make sure that we can, like Mayor Walsh, he wants to build 53,000 new units, and there's a reason for that. He wants younger people to stay here. We also want the older folks to be able to stay in their homes.
Mm. So we've got a tweet here from someone who calls herself Who Harmony, and she basically writes that she doesn't hear what you're saying as a surprise, she's not surprised that out of the Pioneer Institute, she's hearing, and this is a quote from her, grr, government red tape, grr. She's basically, I guess, Harmony, who tweet me more, tell me if I'm misinterpreting what you're saying. But it seems like what you're saying is that you're not surprised that the Pioneer Institute would be looking towards government reform or reducing government regarding permitting to do something about income inequality. So tweet me if I said that right or wrong. but respond to her.
Sure. So I would say absolutely from Pioneer, you should always expect government reform. That's what our business is trying to say. How do you make government work? And I think anybody who looks at the numbers in terms of the number of units that are produced, housing units, just to stay on that issue, it has gone down markedly, even as prices have gone up. I want to fix that. That deserves fixing.
Well, let's get another voice in here just really briefly, if we could. And that's Noah Berger. He's Executive Director of the Massachusetts Budget and Policy Center, also a frequent guest on the show. Noah, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Great to be here.
I was just wondering if we could get your take on what Jim and Mary are saying here about kind of what they're pointing to as structural issues in Massachusetts that are leading to, as they've said, sort of a tale of two states here regarding Greater Boston versus the rest of the state and the problem of rising inequality in Massachusetts. Your take on that?
Yep. I think some of the things they're saying make a lot of sense. I think finding ways to create more affordable housing, particularly in our suburbs as well as in the city, is important for the economy of Massachusetts and for the well-being of people. I think there are some other really big things that I think most economists would say would be crucial things that you could do to expand opportunity that I think are worth our attention. One is early education. I think that a major reason why low-income kids in a lot of our communities fall behind is that they don't have high-quality early education and care. And I think if we could, as a state, make a commitment to doing that, it would have an enormous effect on the ability of low-income kids to succeed and other middle-income kids as well.
Well, Noah, hang on there, because I know you got a list of a couple other things, but since you mentioned early education, let's just hear from Jim and Mary on that.
Sure. Our book also deals with education issues. We think that having access to quality education is the way out for so many kids in the state, throughout the state. And we support doing so by greater choice, promoting charter schools, lifting the cap on charter schools, advancing the METCO program that allows kids to get the best quality education, go on to college at much greater rates than they would if they stayed in their high school. We totally support better education, choice education for kids. And this is all highlighted in the book. Mm. Looking at other options, vocational schools. Vocational schools should be expanded. They give, right now the schools in Massachusetts are performing at rates that are comparable to some of the best suburbs in terms of MCAS scores, graduation rates, and going on to college. So certainly education is a key component of the concept of social mobility.
And Noah, back to you, the next thing on your list?
So I'll just say I'm glad that they have identified education as one of the elements, but I think there are specific things within education that there's a real evidence that they really work for a lot of kids. One is early education. Another is making higher education affordable. I think for a lot of middle-income families in Massachusetts, one of the great obstacles to having their kids be able to succeed in life is not being able to afford to go to college, or if they can afford, to be deep in debt when they get out. And I think if the state could focus on ways to make higher education more affordable, that would have an enormous effect. One other big picture thing is I actually see the inequality issue is not just about low and lower income people. Really, the inequality, if you look at what's happened in this country, is the growing gap between the highest income 1% and pretty much everybody else. There's been very little wage and income growth for middle income people for a long time in America and Massachusetts. And I think one big set of issues you need to think about is what would it take to again begin raising wages and raising incomes for middle income people? And I think there are a lot of things that the state could do in those areas. And I hope in the future, you know, Pioneer can help work more on some of those issues. The only real wage issues I saw in the book was, I think, something about cutting wages for construction workers, reducing the wages for construction workers who work on state projects in the private sector, and maybe some things with state employees. But
right.
I think there are things we could think of, particularly for you know, working parents, to allow them to succeed. You could have paid family medical leave that would allow people to take some time with the young kids, which would be good for those kids, but would also allow those working parents to stay in the workforce when they get back mm-hmm. and are ready to work again. And there are a lot of other things like that that we could do if we'd identified the problem as how best to help, you know, working people get jobs that pay good wages and that begin to restore that sense that we used to have in America, that over time wages in the private sector would be growing.
Noah Berger is Executive Director of the Massachusetts Budget and Policy Center. Noah, thank you so much for joining us.
Sure, anytime. Thank you.
So Jim and Mary, Noah gave us a lot to think about there, but you know, he pointed out something which I actually also wanted to ask you, and that is that really the divide, and you know, many of these people live in Greater Boston, as we were talking about, is between the top 1% of earners and everybody else in the state. And I'm seeing numbers here from the Mass Budget and Policy Center that show that, for example, you know, maybe one area of consideration is taxes, because the top 1% of Massachusetts earners who earn $580,000 or more, they pay just a little over 6% of their personal income in state and local taxes. Those are 2010 numbers. And the lowest 20% of earners are paying nearer to 10% of their income in state and local taxes. But I don't see any tax reform in your book.
Sure. There is some tax reform. Let me take on a couple of quick things. One thing I'd say to Noah's points is that on higher education, we just didn't get there in time for the book. We're developing a policy proposal on that front. I think it's a really important issue that he raises. I would also say that the book deals a lot with actual affordable health care. Because one of the things that's led to the stagnation in wages is the fact that healthcare is eating up more and more of the overall compensation package that we receive. I think we all know that. At Pioneer, we all know that. You know, it's we see it every year where we go through a whole, you know, salary review and that sort of thing. So I think what you're talking about more is a question about fairness. And fairness is an important issue. Okay, I think the book is more focused on economic mobility. And when we thought about tax changes, we were thinking about what would rev up the engine of the economy to create more jobs, because jobs are the ticket forward for anybody. That is, if we can actually stop the hemorrhaging of headquarters, we've lost a third of our headquarters in this state over the last 20 years. That's 250,000 jobs lost. I want that. If we could find a way to make sure that, you know, one of the proposals is how to get people back from unemployment back into the workforce more quickly. One of the ideas is around, for example, on-the-job training and amping up that process so we can get people into the workplace more quickly. That sort of mainstreaming of people who've been out of the workplace is more important to us in this book than the question of fairness that you're pointing to.
Mm. Well, on that note, if we could just return to this idea that we talked to at the beginning, and that is the promise of Massachusetts and the vision that we as citizens of the Commonwealth hold for our state. I mean, are you concerned that we're not going to be able to fulfill that vision 10, 20 years from now, you know, for future generations, because of the increasing gaps that we're seeing, you know, in our society?
Well, certainly the gaps are an issue for all of us, that we see that, and it does create an angst among us. I mean, you feel it all the time when you're talking to your friends or at soccer games. People are very concerned about their finances, and that's reflective in their attitude about the state. But there still is that promise of Massachusetts. I mean, we still need to believe in our government, but we work with our government. It's books like this that will help us get to where we need to be, and finding a consensus among various groups, like in the area of transparency. You can't have an effective democracy without healthy transparency. And we saw at a hearing, you know, all these different groups of different ideologies getting together to try to promote that. And that's a positive for the state.
Well, the new book is Agenda for Leadership, Increasing Economic Mobility and Civic Engagement in Massachusetts. It's released tomorrow, and it's co-edited by Mary Connaughton and Jim Sturgis of the Pioneer Institute. Mary and Jim, thanks so much for coming in today.
Thanks for having us.
Well, listeners, when we come back, Joe Donovan, he was 17 when he was sentenced to life without the possibility of parole. 23 years later, that's about to change. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.